Well, I'm not sure what that was, but it was awesome, right? Some of you, now, come on, is anybody sitting next to someone who flexes in the bathroom like that? Come on, wives, be honest about your husbands. Yeah, some of you got some, right? Hey, I'm excited to introduce this series next week, though. It's called Deaf to Selfie. Really what this series is going to be about, at the core of it, it's going to be on identity and how we often place our identity in so many different things. We're going to talk about selfies. We're going to have some fun with it, but that will be next week, so come here next week expecting to hear awesome messages about identity and where we should find our purpose and all the places we put it instead of where we're supposed to put it. But this week, we're on the final week of Haunted by the Past, and it should be up here in a second here. And how many of you enjoyed this series as much as I have? Anybody here? All right, yeah, it's been good, right? I've heard a lot of awesome stories, but if this is your first week with us in this series, my name is Nathan. I'm the lead pastor here. I have the honor and privilege, and they let me speak most Sundays, so I'm here again. I want to say hello specifically to our online audience. Can you give them a round of applause? We don't talk about them much, but we got some people listening online, so welcome. But today, we're going to wrap a bow on this whole series. We've been looking at this idea that so many of us have a past, that so many of us have failures or regrets of our past, and so many times they become an obstacle on our journey of who God is calling us to be. And we said, hey, you may mess up, you may have failure, but failure doesn't have to be fatal, and your past doesn't have to have the final word. So we're going to wrap it all up today. And I had one message planned, and earlier this week, God put on my heart to change messages, and I very rarely do this. So I believe someone here today needs to hear this. I know you could be anywhere else, but I'm glad you're here today, and you matter here, and I believe you're here for a reason. But let me start with the story. There's a story about a famous chess champion. I don't know how you become a chess champion, but he did. And one day he went on vacation, and not only did he like chess, he also loved art. So in my book, he might have been a little boring, but he went on vacation, and he went to an art gallery. And at the art gallery, as he's walking around, he walks by a picture that looks just like this. And the picture gets his attention. Let me explain what's going on. There's a young man over here dressed up, and they're playing chess. And this person right here, this represents Satan. And if you can kind of see, he's got a little smirk on his face. And this guy has a look of an agony. He's defeated, and they're playing chess. And the background of the story is this game is for his soul. And as you look at the pieces, I don't know anything about chess, but apparently it looks like Satan is winning. And this man is about to be defeated. So the champion looks at this picture and he watches it. He just looks at it for several minutes and he keeps looking at it. And finally, a janitor walks by and he asks the janitor, he says, hey, listen, do you by chance have a chess board that you can bring to me? And the janitor, he says, yeah, I do actually. And he brings out this chess board and they place it down. The champion looks at the picture, places the pieces like it's in the picture, and he makes sure his board looks exactly like this. And he stands there and he looks at his chessboard for several moments. Then he starts to smile. And he says, young man, I wish you could hear me right now, because if you could see what I could see, you wouldn't be looking like this, but you would have a giant smile on your face. And he says, it only looks like Satan's won. I know he's over here yelling checkmate, and that's the title of the picture, checkmate. But young man, there's a move left. You don't see it, but I see it. And it's not only a move that will get you back in the game, it's going to completely win you the game. And I love that imagery. I heard that story by a man named Tony Evans. He shared this story, but I love this imagery because I bet you right now our story, our life can relate to this picture. Take this guy out and put yourself. Keep Satan over there, and this represents your life. And you start living life, you start making choices. There's decisions that you make, things happen to you. There's bad choices, there's things that you can't help. And all of a sudden, life is not going the way you thought it should go. And it's like this, that Satan is telling us or whispering to us over and over again, checkmate. Checkmate. Anybody ever been there before, right? Maybe you're there. I was there not too long ago in my life. Things weren't going the way I wanted. It was nothing that I did to cause this situation. I had a conversation this morning about this. We were having infertility issues. We wanted a child. Things that my other church weren't going. I just felt like God was putting a stirring in my heart to maybe the time was to leave. And there was a lot of things going on. And I found myself discouraged, found myself in this crisis. Sometimes we get there because of choices we make, because of things that happen to us, because of maybe failures or regrets, but we're there. And it's just like that little whisper of checkmate. And then I heard of a pastor named Sean Nepstead in a book that was coming out. And the book was called this, Don't Quit in the Dip. And besides the Bible, this may have been one of the most impactful books of my life at the time I've read it. So I'm going to share a little bit of what he talks about in the dip. But let me explain the dip to you. First, I need everybody to say dip. Dip. All right. Don't quit in the dip. The dip is this. Let me explain. All of you, if I was to sit down and give you a microphone and say, hey, what do you want to happen in your life? You all have a plan for your life. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or you have a plan where you're going to go eat and lunch at after the service. Or you're like, hey, I hope Nathan doesn't talk too long because I'm hungry, right? You got all these plans. And you have a picture-perfect future. And then what happens is you start living life. And here it is. You start heading to that destination. And things are going well and things are going good. And all of a sudden something happens. The something could be a lot of things. It could be you make some bad choices. You have some regrets. You have some failures. You do things that you know you're not supposed to do, but you do them anyway and they cause some issues. It could be a financial crisis. It could be the loss of a loved one. It could be a health crisis. But all of a sudden, what happens is the way that things were supposed to be going, no longer going that way. And you find yourself in the middle of the dip. The dip's a dangerous place to be because in the dip, you're sitting in the regret. You're sitting in the failure. You're sitting in the struggles. You're sitting in the pain. And the dip, it can be dangerous. In a dip, you often have a faith crisis. But what's most dangerous about the dip is in the dip, you can't see what you need to see. See, in the dip, all you can see is the dip. You can't see that, hey, this is just a moment. This isn't going to be like this forever. This is just a moment. It's just one event. It's just one failure. I know it hurts right now, but it's not going to hurt forever. You can't see what you need to see. You can't see what's going to happen tomorrow. All you see is everything that's caused you to be right here. In the dip, you can't see what you need to see. Most of all, you start to have a little bit of doubt about maybe who God is. Maybe you start to ask things like this. Does God still have a plan? God, can you still work? Does he even see me here? I know for me, when I was in my situation, you know, wanting a kid and everybody around me seemed to be popping babies like rabbits, like, I want one. God, I've given my life to you. I do this for a living. This is all I do. I got... Do you still have a plan for me? Are you still working my life? Do you even see me here, God? Do you see me in my prayers? Do you see me in my pain? You ever been there, right? It's difficult. It's hard. And as I looked at that picture of this guy playing chess, I think that's where he was. He's like, hey, God, where am I at? Like, I'm about to lose. Like, I need someone to throw me a lifeline. I need some help here. Well, I want to encourage you today as we wrap this series up, because that's really what this series is about. What happens when life gets me to the dip, and how do I overcome the past? How do I overcome the pain, the failures? I want to take you to a couple of verses in Isaiah. It says, my thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord. To that I say amen, right? Like, thank goodness he doesn't think the way I think. And my ways are far beyond anything you can imagine. I work in ways that you can't see. I work in ways more than you could ever imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways. And my thoughts are higher than your thoughts. I love that we read this in the prophet Isaiah. He's like, listen, God doesn't operate the way we operate. You see, you may be in the dip, but in the middle of the dip, God sees what we don't see. God sees what we can't. God sees what we don't see in our lives. You see, in the middle of the dip, we see the past, but God says, "Hey, I have a future." He sees the pain, but God's going to see the joy outside of the pain. God sees, you see the struggles, and God sees the restoration. God sees what we don't see. And so many times when we're in the dip, we quit. So today, as we end this series, here's what we're going to do. How do we get out of the dip? One, how do we get out of the dip? If you're there right now, how do I get out of that? Two, man, how do I stop making bad choices? How do I keep doing things I don't want to do? How do I stop doing the cycle of failure and regrets? How do I get out of it? What are some things I can do to break those habits? And what's the antidote to it all? But the other goal is this. This is the whole goal of the series. To trust that God has a plan for our lives. Because that's what I believe. That God has a plan for your life, for your story. That you matter to Him. And though you may be in a crisis, you may be in a dip, you may not be where you want to be. But God has a plan for your life. And He's going to see us through the dip. So to do that, I'm going to take you to two verses. Just two verses. That's where we'll be the rest of the day. Two verses. And it's amazing how God speaks to us in two little verses and teaches everything we need to know about getting out of the dip and overcoming our past so we're no longer haunted by it. It's in a letter called Hebrews. It's an ancient letter. It's found in the New Testament. And one thing to do as you're reading these letters, remember that these were written to a group of people. Real people like you and I. Yeah, they don't have iPhones and smartphones and selfies, but they have real emotions like we did, and they're going through real struggles. And the letter of Hebrews, this ancient letter of Hebrews, it's an amazing letter. We don't know necessarily who wrote the letter. Many people assume Paul wrote it. That's where I lean. But the letter in itself is to a group of people who are struggling. They find themselves in a dip. They're followers of Jesus, who used to be Jewish. And because of their faith, now they're being persecuted, they're being arrested, and some are even being killed for their faith. And they're tempted to go back to the way things were. They're tempted to give up on their faith. They're tempted to leave Jesus. And the author is going to write to them in this letter and says, hey, listen, don't give up. Don't quit. Jesus is greater. Jesus is better than anything in this life. Don't quit. Don't quit. So the overall theme of Hebrews is that Jesus is greater, that Jesus is the high priest, that Jesus is the answer to everything we need in our life. And I'm going to take you to two verses in the letter of Hebrews chapter 12. And here's what it says. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run. Everybody say run. Run with endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes, that's going to be important, by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Some translations say the perfecter of faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Let's kind of talk about, it's a lot here. Let's talk about the overall context of these, and then we'll break it down kind of verse by verse. The overall context, the author is using analogies, using illustration to connect with his audience. He's saying this. He's like, life is like a race. Like a marathon. And the racing and marathons and Olympic sports were really popular at this time. And he's like, listen, life is like a marathon or a race. And you're like, man, I can't even imagine running a marathon. Anybody else? You're like, I get tired going in the refrigerator between commercial breaks. Like, I'm not going to run a marathon. And so he's like, life is like a race. And he uses this word, the word race here is this word agon. You know what word, that word, the root, what that is the root word of? The word agony. Anybody feel agony when they run? Like, yes, okay. All of a sudden we relate. We're like, yes, running is agony. It causes us agony. And actually, if you kind of dig deep on this, this word agony, kind of the context is, he would be describing a running event or a race that the audience was familiar with called a pentathlon, I believe is how you say it. It's five events, running, swimming, and two other ones. And at the end of all this exercise, you would find an opponent and you would box them, right? And you would have such agony to finish it. And so it's like sometimes, and some of us need to hear this, sometimes the race of life, that agon, sometimes there's agony in our story. And sometimes there's pain in our story. And sometimes as we're running this race, we want to quit. If you've ever ran a lot of distances, you know there's a point where you get like, I want to quit. And if you can just get past that point, you get something called the runner's high. I don't know if that really exists, but they say it exists, right? You want to keep running, go. He's like, sometimes in life you have to do that. He's like, the journey's going to be up and down. And there's going to be dips, and there's going to be valleys, and there's going to be mountains, and there's going to be peaks, and there's going to be good, and there's going to be bad, there's going to be pain, there's going to be celebration. It's a marathon. So don't give up in the middle. So he sets, that's the context of what he's saying to us and the audience. And then it goes on. It says, therefore, okay, here's the old preacher rule. Like, you know, they make all the jokes. When you see it, therefore, you have to figure out what it's there for. So he's therefore. So he's referring to something, and we'll get to that in a second. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses, therefore, since we are surrounded. So this therefore points us back to a previous chapter in the book of Hebrews. Remember, when the Bible was written originally, it did not have chapters or verses. So it's just connecting a thought. And it's connecting the thought of Hebrews 11, which is called the Faith Hall of Fame. In the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, there's the Faith Hall of Fame. And you read all these names, and it celebrates their faith. It celebrates the things that God has done in their life. The amazing thing about all this, I guess, would be this. The names that appear in that chapter. There's men like Noah. Noah had a moment when he got drunk and it about ruined everything. There's Moses. Moses was insecure. He had an ego at times. He had a temper at times. There's Rahab in this Faith Hall of Fame. She was a prostitute. There was David. David had all kinds of issues. There's Samson, like we've talked about. Samson, man, he was good looking, had big muscles, but man, he couldn't make any good choices, right? He'd make bad choices. Gideon was fearful. All these people are celebrating Hebrews 11 for having good faith. And all these people are celebrating for what God did in their lives. So as you connect this, he's saying, listen, as you're stuck in the middle of the dip, as things are hard for you, he's like, remember, you're surrounded by a huge crowd of witnesses. And that's the first step of how to get out of the dip. And this is what we don't talk about much. He's like, look at the stories of others to motivate you in your story. Look at what God has done in other people's stories to motivate you to keep pressing on. And isn't it on just a real simple level, and sometimes when we're in the middle of our dip, when we're in the middle of our struggles, or we're in the middle of a situation in life that's tough and we don't know how to overcome, isn't it nice to be able to look at people around you? Isn't it nice to look at people who've gone through what you've gone through and made it to the other side? Because it reminds you, like, man, if they did it, I can do it. And you can look at the book of Hebrews and say, man, I might be messed up, but at least I'm not Samson, right? Like, I'm not that messed up. And God used him? Whoa. And he's like, look at those people who've run the race before you. And look at how God used them. And imagine if God can use them, what he can do in your story. That's what's awesome about Revolution. You know, one thing that has really drawn me to this community that I love so much is we don't pretend to be perfect. We don't pretend to have it all together. That there are so many stories of people here that share their stories. It's like, man, one time I was in a dark place. I was a place I didn't want to be. And look what God has done for me. And we need to share those stories to people. We need to be able to come alongside people and say, listen, man, I was just where you were. And God's going to be faithful because he was faithful to me. So he's like, when you feel like giving up, when you feel like you can't run any further, look at the people who've gone before you as motivation to what God can do in your life. And then he gets a little bit more serious. It says, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. He's sticking with the analogy of running. I call these the get in shape verses. He's like, get in shape and lose the dead weight. He's like, you wanna run the race well, you wanna run with endurance, lose the dead weight. But he uses this little word right here, this little phrase, strip off. Can I tell you a little bit about that real quick? History tells us that when runners in these times would run, they would strip off every weight that slows them down. At times, some of the runners in these races would run naked. Like, can you imagine that? Hey, I'm going to a track meet today, and you get there, everybody has stripped their clothes off and they're running, right? They would strip off all their clothes. They would strip off anything that's going to slow them down. And I imagine the winner would just be the guy who smelled the worst that nobody else wanted to be by, right? Like, he's naked and he stinks. I'm not running by him at all, right? But they would strip off everything, all the weight, because they didn't want to be slowed down. And they knew sometimes the difference between the winner and the loser would be seconds or inches. And any advantage by stripping off their clothes. Now, I do not recommend going to Planet Fitness, the YMCA, or any other gym and doing this, right? Like, I do not recommend that. You can't say, hey, they said it in the Bible either. Like, they're not going to take that excuse at Planet Fitness, right? You got to keep your clothes on there. But listen, that's the imagery he's saying. Like, I want you to strip off anything that's getting in your way. There's choices that you're making. There's decisions that you're making. There's things that you're doing. There's something in your life that's causing you to carry dead weight. That's causing you to carry weight you don't need to carry. And if you want to get to that life that God has for you, even if you don't, if you're not there yet, if you want to get to the life that you have for yourself, you're going to have to get rid of the dead weight. You have to get rid of the weight. Whenever I heard this image this week, I thought of this trip that about 5 years ago, my sister was getting married in California. She left Illinois to go to California, and I lived in Southeast Indiana by Cincinnati, and then my parents lived in Northern Illinois, and we were going to all meet out there. Whitney couldn't go with me because of her work schedule, so my parents had this amazing plan that they were going to drive out there. I was like, yeah, y'all a bunch of crazy people. I'm not driving to California. Then my mom called me and said, hey, listen. She kind of put on like the guilt. She's like, hey, will you just ride with us out there, and then you can fly back? And to my better judgment, I said yes. Right? It was the worst choice, right? And so if you're thinking right now, let me just save you some time. If you're thinking about taking a road trip across the country with your family, think twice, okay? Just think twice. So we get this, and she's like, hey, it's going to be perfect. We're going to rent a 15-passenger van, you know, all this stuff. And so there's going to be my brother, two brothers and I, me, my stepdad, my mom, and my grandma. Six people, 15-passenger van. Should be good, right? Like, easy, easy. Like, we're going to have all this room. I was promised all this room. And I get to, you know, I end up getting dropped off in Illinois. Whitney drove back. I get to my parents' house. And this van, I kid you not, I'm like, Mom, are we living in this thing? Like, there's enough stuff in here for 30 people. The back seats were removed. There was luggage all the way to the ceiling. Like, my mom's luggage could have stacked to the ceiling by herself. She overpacked everything. And so it was all packed. And so we drove this van with all this extra weight, all this extra luggage across the country. We made four stops along the way. And every time we got out, guess what we had to do? Carry all this baggage, all this junk. You know, my mom had to carry all her junk. My stepdad had to carry all her junk because she's overpacking. She ain't carrying anything, right? I don't know what her problem is, but she didn't carry any of it. And so we're carrying all her stuff. And about trip two, you know, stop two, gets a little annoying. And you know this, if you're flying or on your vacation, your baggage becomes your dead weight. If you want to overpack, sure, go ahead. Guess what, though? You're carrying it all over. Anybody ever been to the beach, right? You go to the beach. Some of you are, I can tell by looking at you, you bring way too much stuff from the beach, and that's how we know you're not from the beach, right? And like, you're trying to go through the sand with all this extra weight. It's slowing you down. We understand that imagery. But the imagery is here is like, listen, there's something in your life that's weighing you down. He calls it the weight of sin. He gets real serious. He goes, it's the weight of sin. There are choices that you're making that are causing you to be weighed down. There are choices in your life that you're making that are making your run more difficult. And he calls it the weight of sin. And the phrase for sin, or the word for sin, is right here. It means the missing of the mark. What it means is that there's a way that God's called us to live. And it's not for a list of rules. It's not just so we can be perfect. It's so like, no, that we can have our best life and a relationship with God. And every time we sin, we miss the mark. And what sin does is it sends us in the opposite direction and it weighs us down. So the way that God wants us to live is over here. Every time we sin, we get further and further and further. And we start running the race backwards. And it's slowing us down and it's weighing us down, because you know what sin does? It might feel fun. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's pleasurable. Sometimes you enjoy it in the moment. That's what's so tricky about it. Because in the moment, it doesn't seem that bad, but it comes with a consequence. And it will shame you. It will enslave you. They say it will make you pay more than you want to pay and take you further than you want to go. It'll keep you living in the dip. It will whisper to you over and over again, checkmate. And the problem with sin, and we don't talk about this enough, the problem with sin is that God's got a plan for your life. And every time we give into these temptations and we sin, it gets us off this plan. And sin is the secret of why we're in the cycle of failure we're in, why we make bad choices, why we can't overcome these desires we have. And so the author, he's not judging. We're not judging. We're not condemning. We're just saying, listen, that stuff is sending you in the wrong direction and it's weighing you down. You need to strip it off. Strip it off. Strip off whatever is weighing you down. But here's the kicker. I know what my whatever is. And you know what your whatever is. Come on, you do, you do, you do, you know, you know, you know. I know mine, right? If I don't know mine, I just ask my wife and she lets me know for me, right? I know mine. But you know yours. Come on, you know, right? You know what the things are in your life that you keep doing that you don't really want to do, but you keep doing anyways, keep causing issues. You know, come on, you know what the problem is with your relationships. You know the relationships that you're in that you shouldn't be in. You know you shouldn't answer that DM that gets slid in, that gets sent to you late at night. You know. Because nothing good happens late at night. You know. Come on, you know the substances. You know the places. You know the people. You know what you know what's causing you to have dead weight. You know what's keeping you in the dead. You know. You know. I know mine. You know yours. We all have different ones, but the author says, listen, strip it off. Because it keeps easily tripping you up. And the longer it's there, the more it's going to trip you up. And the more you get tripped up, the slower your race is going to be. The longer it's going to be, the more issues you're going to have. So I want to talk about this real quick. Because I think so much of life comes down to choices. Faith is choices. Our life is choices. It comes down to the power of decisions. Decisions matter. And I wish someone would have shared this with me long time ago before I made all these mistakes. So I want you to imagine that you have a choice in front of you. It's a major choice. Or you have your temptation in front of you. And often when the temptation is in front of us, we kind of simplify it to the most simple question we ask. Is this the right thing to do or is it the wrong thing to do? Is it a sin or not to sin? Right? That's kind of like growing up, like, okay, what's a sin and what's not a sin? And the reason on the surface this question isn't bad, but really what happens in human nature is this. Imagine that this is the line. Right, and this is the good side and this is the bad side. What we do is we're like, hey, okay, what is or how is the closest I can get to this line? Like, what are the choices I can make to get the closest to this line and still be good with God? Like, how close can I get to this line and still be cool with God? Like, you know, like, what's the closest I can get? Because that's what I want to do. That's a really crazy question that we do in faith because, like, we don't say this, like, okay, what's the closest, like, how little do I have to love my spouse and they still love me back, right? We don't ask that. Or, okay, how little can I do and still be considered a good parent? But in faith, sometimes it's like, okay, how close can I get to this line and look like everybody else yet still be cool with God? And I'm going to say that way of thinking causes so many issues in our life. But maybe we should ask a different question. Again, we're not trying to follow a list of rules. We're trying to run this race with endurance. We're trying to get on the life that God has planned for us. We want a relationship with God because when we're in a relationship with God and it's going right, things are the way they should be. So the question is it right or wrong to do? You could get that and do the bare minimum. But if you want to get serious, if I want to get serious about having fewer regrets, of making less mistakes, of sinning less, and we're never going to be sinless, but are we going to overcome the things that keep beating us? Are we going to overcome the temptations that we keep giving into? If we want to do that, this is the bare minimum. Why don't we ask a different question? And I know it's going to seem extreme to the world, but it's not extreme because if we can answer this next question right, if we can funnel our decisions and our choices through this funnel of questioning, you're going to have fewer regrets. You're going to have less moments of the dip. You're going to be able to control. Now, you can't control life because bad things will still happen, but you're going to have fewer mistakes. You're going to have fewer regrets. And here it is. Not is it right or wrong, but will it help my run? Will it help me get to the finish line that I want to get to? With that, it's asking, is it in line with God's will? Our greatest honor and our greatest purpose in this life is to glorify God with our choices and our decisions and the way we live. Is what I'm about to do in line with God's will, right? And some things like, hey, you know, God, you know, there's certain questions where, like, yeah, God's like, hey, gives you great freedom. Honor me in these choices. Second one, will help me become more like Jesus. One of our foundational principles is helping people become more like Jesus. That means asking decisions. Will it help me become like Jesus? Three, does it add any unnecessary weight to my run? Right? Like if I was to tell you, hey, you had to run a 5K, right? And most of you are like, no, I don't want to do that. But it's like, no, you don't just have to run. You have to run with a backpack of 100 pounds on your back. You're like, no, I'm out, right? But sometimes in life, we add unnecessary weight by the choices we make. Will it help my run? Is it in line with God's will? Is it helping me become more like Jesus? And does it add any unnecessary weight? And you start funneling your decisions through that. You're not going to be perfect. None of us are perfect. We're all going to fall short. But you'll start to see that the moments that you can control, the dip moments become less and less. I heard this quote. It's living in a way now that 100 years from now, you'll be glad you did. Living in a way now that 100 years from now, you'll be glad you did. So strip off the weight. And the question becomes, okay, how? And the author answers that too. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus. This word right here, eyes, is so important because where your focus goes often leads you to your next decision. And when you see every temptation you've ever given into, you first see it or think about it. So your eyes, keep your eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith because of the joy awaiting him. He endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he is seated in a place of honor beside God's throne. He keeps with this analogy of running. At this point, we're like, dude, okay, we get it. We're tired just reading about you running, right? We're tired. But he's like, no, I want you to imagine that you're running a race. And you're tired. You're out of breath. You need water. You need Gatorade, right? You got the skinny tank top on and the short shorts on, and you're running. But you're tired. You want to give up. He's like, but I want you to focus forward. I want you to focus forward, and all of a sudden you see the finish line. And all of a sudden that finish line, you see it because you can see it. It gives you the strength to move forward. It's like, okay, now I want you to imagine your life. You're tired. You're in the dip. You're worn out. You're in pain. You lost a loved one. You made bad choices. And you want to give up. He goes, here's what I want you to do. I want you to fix your focus. Because where your focus is where your attention goes. I want you to fix your focus forward and on Jesus. Why? Because he's the perfecter of faith. He's the champion. He's the one who's already ran the race before you, but he completed the race in perfect time. He lived a life that was tempted but did not sin. He ran the race and did not fall, did not stumble, did not have a dip. He kept moving forward and he endured the cross and he took off the weight that sin has on us forever. So you no longer had to run with the weight of sin. He's like, that's why you strip it off, but you keep your focus on him. Because Jesus is the only one who can save you from what easily entangles you. So keep focused on him. I know it's hard. I know you're tired. I know you're in pain. I know you want to give up, but keep your focus forward. Keep your focus on him because he's the only one that can save you from what easily entangles you. He's like, Satan wants you to live in sin. Satan wants you to live in the past. Satan wants you to live in the dip. Satan wants you to live in the struggle, in the addiction, in the pain. He wants you to live in all of your mistakes. But he says, focus forward. Focus on who Jesus is. And I know, listen, I know it's easy for someone on a stage to say that, isn't it? I get that. I didn't always believe this. Most of what I know about Jesus has come in the last 10, 12 years of my life. I didn't grow up going to church. I didn't grow up figuring that Jesus was the answer to everything. I didn't realize that. So I'm going to say this with all sincerity, all love for you guys. I don't know all of you. Man, Jesus is the answer. And I don't know any other way to say it, but from my life and experience, what I've seen Jesus do in other people's life, that Jesus is the answer. He's the answer. Why, you want to know, how do I get out of the cycle of failure and regret? It's focusing on Jesus. How do I get out of this life where everything I seem to do seems meaningless? It's focusing on Jesus. How do I get out of this cycle of being trapped in pain where it's so dark some days, all I can see is that? It's focusing on Jesus. See, Jesus never said that we wouldn't have pain, that we wouldn't have dip. He just says, I'm not going to leave you in the past by yourself. So here's the answer to no longer being haunted by the past. It's to focus on what Jesus is calling us to. It's to focus on what Jesus is calling you to. And it's to fix your eyes on him. And I'll end with this. We'll wrap a bow on haunted by the past with this. Here we go. This is my bow motion, by the way. In the 1800s, legend has it, we don't know if it's true, but in the 1800s in England, the death rate was soaring. There was some type of poison going on. They couldn't figure it out. And so people were dying at a rapid rate. So fast that they didn't have a place to bury him. So some of the shady cemetery owners would dig up the old coffins. How scary would that be, by the way? Dig them up, right? And they would open up and they would just get rid of the other remains. But while they were doing this, they found something. They found that the top of the coffin, the lid, had scratch markings on many of them. They later found out that what happened was that this poison would cause some people to go in a coma-like state, and they would accidentally be buried alive. Now imagine how freaky that would be, right? Buried alive. So they came up with this. This is where the legend comes in. We don't know if it's true or not. They came up with this system that they would wrap the dead man's or dead woman's arm with a bell, and the bell would be at the top. And if they woke up, they in a panic, they could ring the bell by trying to scratch out the coffin. And then the graveyard worker, that's where the graveyard shift comes into play, that terminology, would go and rescue them. Maybe you're here today and you feel buried alive by shame, by pain, by regrets, by our past. And you're scratching and clawing, but you can't get out. No, nothing you're doing, you just can't get out of it. And you're trying to ring that bell. Well, the promise of Jesus is every time you ring that bell, he'll answer the call. And he says, I'm not calling you into your old life, but if you follow me and give your life to me and make me savior of your life, you are a new creation. You have a new hope and a new future. And you may not always see the benefit this side of heaven, but one day the promise is 100 years from now, you'll be in paradise with me. So don't give up. Don't quit running. There's a race to still run in your life. So strip off the weight, ditch the weight, because there's people who need help, and there's a world that needs reached. So we're gonna focus our eyes on who Jesus is, what Jesus has done. Don't quit in the dip. Focus on Jesus and no longer be haunted by the past. Let's pray. God, we are so thankful, so thankful for you. You give us a new life, a new hope, a new future. God, we're gonna continue to focus on you. And God, if there's anybody here today who needs just to talk about what that means, Father, I pray we have that conversation. But God, we're going to worship you in just a few moments again to keep our focus and attention on you. We're going to ask you to speak to us in this place, in this moment, right here, right now. In your name we pray. Amen.